Hi everyone, I'm Elena Mayville and I'll be the moderator for today's call-in. I'm delighted to welcome you to our presentation with Dr. Edward Selby, who will be giving a talk on emotional cascades and understanding the chaos and complexity of borderline personality disorder. To start, a few brief administrative details. First, if you're registered for the call-in series, you should have received an email with the slides. So please download the handout now if you haven't already. We'd like to acknowledge the Gunderson residents at McLean Hospital in Massachusetts and the Clearview Treatment Program in Venice, California, who are generously helping to sponsor this program. We hope individuals on the call will also show support of these calls and make a donation of any amount to help continue the call-in series in the future and to ensure that recordings will be made available when you are not able to be on the call. You can do that on our website at borderlinepersonalitydisorder.com, or you can click on the link in the newsletter you received. If you could email your questions during the talk to neabpd@aol.com, we will ask questions at the end of the call. Again, that's neabpd@aol.com. We will finish promptly by 9 p.m. As always, the audio and slides from the call will be archived at borderlinepersonalitydisorder.com, so please feel free to pass on the link to people in your network who couldn't make it tonight. Now it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Edward Selby, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Rutgers University. He completed his clinical psychology doctoral training at Florida State University, where he was funded by the National Institute of Mental Health as a predoctoral fellow conducting research on emotion dysregulation and BPD. He completed a clinical internship at Brown University's Warren Alpert Medical School. While on the faculty at Rutgers, he has continued to do research in BPD and has been funded by an NARSAD Young Investigator Grant, which funds promising neurobiological researchers. He has authored over 50 peer-reviewed journal articles that have been cited over 1,500 times, and his work has been featured in many publications, from Psychology Today to New York Magazine, which is a reflection, I believe, of both how interesting his work is and how committed he is to educating the public. With that, I'd like to thank Edward for donating his time to do this call and for his support of the NEA effort to help further educate the BPD community.
Hi.
Is Dr. Selby on the call?
All right.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I'm not sure what happened there. My phone said it was muted at some point. So shall I go ahead and get going?
Yes.
Yep, that would be great.
Okay. Sorry about that for everybody who's
listening. No problem. Thank you for your patience.
Okay. So I started going, but I wasn't sure that I was on mute, but now I know that I was. Just to reintroduce myself, I'm Edward Selby. I am on the faculty at Rutgers University, specializing in the study of emotion and how problems with regulating emotion can contribute to different types of psychopathology, with a major focus on borderline personality disorder. Today I'm going to be talking about emotional responding and how that can be affected by BPD and how that can affect people in their daily lives. Everybody should be familiar with BPD at this point, but just in case we're not, I'm going to run through a quick summary of common symptoms for the disorder. One of the major focuses of this disorder is turbulent emotions. So people with BPD are often experiencing very frequent fluctuations in emotional experience and often very intense emotional experiences. In addition to that, they often have what are called dysregulated or impulsive behaviors. So this can include things like substance use, binge eating on food, interpersonal aggressive behaviors, or even things like reckless driving. Another important part of the disorder is difficulties with suicidal behavior and non-suicidal self-injurious behavior, which includes things like cutting. Interpersonal relationships are often stormy in borderline personality disorder, with people often having a lot of frequent intense interpersonal challenges and difficulties resolving interpersonal situations. Two of these factors are particularly focused on in the research that I do, and that's the turbulent emotions and the dysregulated behaviors. So we're going to see how these two symptom sets really connect quite a bit in terms of the disorder and how we can understand that these aren't completely different symptoms, but rather highly interrelated. Moving on to the next slide, where we talk about vulnerability in psychopathology, I just want to summarize where we kind of stand as a field in terms of understanding borderline personality disorder. We've done a lot of great work looking at factors of vulnerability, such as genetics and heritability, biological and neurological risk factors for the disorder, as well as social and familial risk factors for the disorder. And we, at this point, have really established that these vulnerabilities ultimately contribute, all of them, to the development of borderline personality disorder, as well as associated things like self-injury and eating disorder behavior. But the problem is you'll see this black box with a question mark in it, is once we understand these vulnerabilities and how they lead to psychopathology, we're sort of at a loss of, okay, once they have a vulnerability, how does someone then in the process develop BPD? And one of the things we look at in our lab is the emotional mechanisms. How does difficulties with these vulnerabilities lead to emotion regulation difficulties that ultimately leads to what we see as borderline personality disorder? One of the biggest features that we focus on in my lab is a concept called emotional cascades, which is something that's fairly new over the last few years, but has really shown to be promising with a lot of the research we've been doing and sort of helps better understand this emotion dysregulation process in borderline personality disorder. If you go to the slide with the waterfall, I'm going to help walk you through understanding what an emotional cascade is and then how that relates to borderline personality disorder. Typically, an emotional cascade starts with the experience of an emotion, usually a negative emotion, and this could be something that would upset anyone. It could be getting some criticism or negative feedback on something. It could be having a bad day at work, or it could even be something as a perceived emotion, something where something was misread or miscommunicated. What that leads to is, in people with BPD, is what we think is called rumination. And rumination is a process where people repetitively mull and chew on an upsetting thought and think about it over and over and over, thinking about the different consequences of the problem, the causes of the problem, and how that can relate to a variety of other problems. What we found is that when people ruminate, that tends to increase their emotional intensity. So if something bad happens, someone ruminates on that, it makes them even more upset. But what we've also found is that the more people become upset, the more they tend to increase their rumination on a problem. So they think about the problem even more intensely. So we see this feedback loop of people ruminating about something that upset them, getting upset, getting even more ruminative, and then becoming even more upset, until this keeps building in a sort of building up cycle that leads to ultimately what we would call an emotional cascade, which is an extremely intense and usually a very painful emotional experience. Now, this is where we think dysregulated behaviors come into the disorder, is when someone's experiencing an emotional cascade, it's a very painful and intense experience that's not very easy to just calm down from. So this is where we think that people then engage in these dysregulated behaviors, because if you think about the various behaviors that are involved in BPD, things like self-injury, binging on food, reckless driving, substance use, most of them have a very potent physical sensation that goes along with them. So with self-injury, for example, it could be pain or frequently the sight of the sight of blood. Or with a substance use, it could be the intense physical effects of the drug that's being used. And what this does is it allows people to shift away from rumination and instead onto the physical sensations that are involved with the dysregulated behavior. By shifting their focus onto those sensations, it then decreases the rumination and decreases the emotional cascade. So it essentially short circuits the emotional cascade. That ultimately leads to a feeling of brief, temporary relief, sort of escaping the emotional storm for a moment, if you will. The problem is most of these dysregulated behaviors, while very potent at stopping emotional cascade in the short term, are not very healthy to do multiple times or over the long term. So self-injury, for example, leads to a number of problematic outcomes, even if it works effectively in the moment of getting away from negative emotion. Now I want to talk a little bit about some of the research that we've done on emotional cascades. And I primarily have graphs and figures to show. And I'm going to walk through what each of these is and sort of highlight why we think that there's evidence for this process going on. And then from there I'm going to move into more talk of the broader picture of how this leads to the development of the disorder, as well as what are the treatment implications for understanding emotional cascades. So the first slide you should see says rumination induction and has some bars on it. I'm going to explain what is going on this slide for you. What we did was we had people with BPD and then a control group of people without BPD complete what we call a rumination induction. And this is a task where we had them think about a personally relevant, upsetting topic for 5 minutes. And what we did is we had them rate their emotions before and after, so their negative emotions, how upset, sad, angry are you feeling. Now, the first yellow bars, you'll see arrows pointing to those, was baseline. So this is before they even did anything, how upset were you feeling? And as you can see on this graph, the people with BPD were already more upset. They could have been having a bad day, or they may have been sort of annoyed to be in the research study. It's hard to say, but even just before anything happened, they were more upset. Now, if you look at the red bars, you'll see that the this is after the induction, and once again, the people with BPD were much, much more upset after we had them engage in this rumination induction as compared to the control group. But what's really interesting in this kind of task is when you compare the change from before to after, and if you look at the different arrows between this change, you'll see that the people with BPD were much more reactive to this task. So they responded with a much stronger reaction to having been instructed to think about upsetting thoughts than the control group. And there's some statistics on there, but basically we found that this was a medium effect, which means that although not a perfect study, that it really did sort of get them upset in the way we were sort of trying to do. So what that means is that it's just having someone with BPD in a lab and having them think about something upsetting. Now just imagine that effect in real life when they're actually experiencing something upsetting. You're likely to see this sort of much more reactive process than you would see with somebody without BPD. Advancing to the next slide, we've been taking things out of the laboratory and trying to get into the daily personal lives of people with BPD with this research, and trying to look at, can we actually use this measurement of emotional cascades to sort of predict real-life problematic behaviors like self-injury or using a substance or getting into a fight. So the way we do this primarily is through experience sampling, which if you see on the next slide, we have what's called a Palm Pilot there, which at this point is a defunct technology, but basically is what preceded smartphones. And so a lot of this research has only recently moved into smartphones, but what I'm going to present on now was done with these Palm Pilots. What was really nice with Palm Pilots was you were able to get real-life recordings from people and what they were experiencing in their day-to-day lives. So we have people take these out, and they get randomly signaled multiple times throughout the day, during which we ask them, what were you thinking about? What were you feeling? What kind of interpersonal experiences have you been having? And that allows us to kind of get a sense of what is actually happening to these individuals in their daily life. If you advance to the next slide, I just have a few things shown here showing how many dysregulated behaviors we were able to get from the sample. This was a sample of 50 individuals. About 17 of them had BPD diagnoses, and a number had other various diagnoses. But what you can see is using this method, we got a variety of different behavioral reports of alcohol use, self-injury, marijuana use, or even binge eating on food. So a number of people reported a number of these problems. What that means is it's good in terms of the research component of understanding these specific dysregulated behaviors. If you go to the next slide, it says predictive validity, and I'm going to explain what that means in just a second. But what we wanted to show was that we could measure what someone was thinking and what someone was feeling at one time and use that to predict how they behaved 2 to 3 hours later. So at signal one, we measured if they were ruminating and if they had high negative emotion. You'll see lag. That's just a statistical way of saying from one recording to another. And then we use that to predict, did they do something like use alcohol? Did the individual engage in a binge-purge episode? Or did they self-injure? And what we found was that the people who were ruminating really heavily and feeling a lot of negative emotion were extremely likely to engage in a dysregulated behavior within the next 2 to 3 hours. And in fact, if you go to the next slide, which has a variety of lines on a graph, the top line, which is the darkest, shows you that the people with BPD, this is an extremely strong effect. So if you had BPD, you were ruminating about an upsetting problem and you were upset, then you were almost approaching a 100% chance of engaging in one of these dysregulated behaviors. So that means we were able to predict real-world behavior based on people's previous emotional experiences. And I think that that's a very interesting finding, not only for understanding this emotional cascade process, but it also means that hopefully over time we'll be able to develop more technology to help sort of catch people when they're feeling this way and help them stop and cope with emotions in a better way and thus prevent the problem behaviors like self-injury from occurring. So I think our ability to measure and see this in real life is very promising. If you advance to the next slide, you'll see what's called instability of rumination. And this is sort of another way of using daily life data to try and understand what the emotional experience of people with BPD is like. In the first picture, you'll see stable. What this is this is one person, one of the control participants without BPD, and their experience of rumination on a daily basis. So how intense were they ruminating and how frequently were we seeing these fluctuations? And what you see is the first individual with stable rumination had just a few peaks here and there. Maybe they got a little bit upset about something. Maybe something sort of got them thinking in an upsetting manner, but nothing really that bad. Now, if you pull up the unstable index, you see it's much, much more intense of a process. This was one of the BPD participants from our study, and what we see is that each of those peaks is a different reporting from their daily experiences. And we see that they're going off the charts almost on a lot of their emotional responses. So one minute the individual is feeling fairly okay, then by the next time, 2 to 3 hours later, they're extremely upset. Then it comes back a few hours later and they're feeling much better. And then later on, they're much more upset again. So we see that they're sort of all over the place in terms of their emotional responses. And that just shows how intense and frequently fluctuating emotions are in BPD, especially relative to people without BPD. Now, I'm going to move on to the next slide, which says butterfly effect, and talk about some of our really recent work, which is currently in press at the Journal of Personality. And with what we did was we were able to sort of look at what's called chaos theory in borderline personality disorder. Some people may have heard of it, others might not have, and it's a very complex sort of dynamical science. But I've worked to try and make sure that we can sort of keep it in a very relatable and understandable way. And the reason why we've looked at this is because it sort of goes into our understanding of BPD and why it's such an intense, fluctuating, sort of unpredictable experience. So the butterfly effect, you may have heard, refers to you if you have a butterfly flap its wings in one part of the world, that could potentially lead to a hurricane in the other part of the world. What this concept is known as is sensitive dependence on initial conditions. Now, another way to think of this is sort of, there's a lot of different ways to understand this, but the way we're thinking about it in the current context is a compounding effect. So even small differences can lead to very extreme differences in the outcome. If you go to the next slide, you'll see a black graph with dollars and time. This is your basic compounding interest graph, which I'm sure many people have had experience with retirement accounts or even just basic savings plans. And what you've got here is you've got a yellow line, a red line, and a blue line. And if you look at the start of the time bar, that's the initial sort of baseline investment. You can see that the blue invested a little bit, the red invested more than that, and then the yellow invested the most. Now, what happens is over time, these effects keep compounding on each other and you get more and more money with the more you start with. And what you can see is that the blue line, for example, this individual didn't invest as much, and it didn't compound anywhere near as much after 25 years. The yellow line, on the other hand, shows someone who invested quite a bit at the start, and then that earned more interest, made more money, compounded on itself, and kept rising in an exponential manner, so that this individual made quite a bit more money at the end of the investment process than the individual with the low starting baseline. We're going to get to that in a moment, is how this applies to BPD. So in some people, we see this compounding effect of BPD, an extremely strong and sensitive connection between negative thought and negative emotion, particularly for those with BPD. So if you advance to the next slide where it says butterfly effect of emotional cascades, I'm going to tell you what we did with this. So for the first signal, we looked at how much was someone ruminating and how upset were they. Then we looked at if there was an exponential compounding effect with this on rumination and negative emotion 2 to 3 hours later. So how does someone's thinking now impact their thinking and emotions 2 to 3 hours later? So if you go to the next slide, you'll see at the top it says rumination effects. And what we see is this very three-line graph that we were just looking at with the compounding interest in the financial considerations. Except this is emotions and thoughts. So what we see here is the dark line, that's the average individual. The bottom line is someone who has low effects of this, and someone who has high effects is on the top line. So if you look at the very start of the graph, what you can see is people differ in their sort of baseline connection between emotion and thought. So some people, maybe some of you, some people I know, don't seem to get very upset at things. They would be sort of on this lower line, that even when things are sort of falling apart around them, they just don't seem to get too upset about it. Even the more they think about an upsetting problem, it doesn't seem to affect them as much as others. On the other hand, if you look at the top line, this is sort of where we would classify people with BPD. So they're already sort of a little bit more sensitive to negative emotions. And then when they start to get upset and start to think about upsetting problems, it starts to skyrocket, basically. So what they see is the more upsetting, more they think about an upsetting problem, the more they start to feel extremely upset, and the more they start to think about that problem even more intensely. So we're showing that people with BPD, in a way, are fundamentally different in their connection between negative emotion and rumination, more so than other people. And that can be a bit of a challenge for people who don't have this strong connection to understand. If you advance to the next one, we see the same thing for negative emotions, that the stronger connection people have between negative emotions and negative thoughts, the more you see this butterfly effect for people with BPD. So once again, the top line on both of these graphs, it's the top dashed line, those are the people who would have BPD most of the time, and they seem to just fly off the charts with negative emotions the more upset they get. Now, we also were able to look at this with dysregulated behaviors. So not only does this butterfly effect apply to emotions and thoughts, but it also applies to behaviors. So if you go to the next slide, which has two graphs on it, and it says dysregulated behaviors at the top, we see once again this same sort of difference between people. And at the bottom line, you see some people, seems like even if they're thinking really intensely about a problem, they're often not getting as upset, and they're not really acting in a dysregulated way. On the other hand, the top line, which is once again where most of the people with BPD would fall, you see that the more they got upset and the more they ruminated about problems, the more and more likely they were to engage in one of these dysregulated behaviors like self-injury, substance use, or aggressive behavior, binge eating. So once again, it's showing that they're getting so upset that it's almost increasing the chances that they'll do some sort of problematic behavior, getting close to 100%. So the takeaway message is that we were able to show that there's this sort of butterfly effect in people with BPD, and that the more they get upset, the more intensely it keeps sort of building on itself in a way that's not applicable to other people without BPD. And that in many ways, dysregulated behaviors serve as what's often called as an attractor, that basically it starts to become almost the only option for people as they start to fly into these emotional cascades that are extremely powerful and intense. As we'll talk about in a minute here when we get to treatment effects, a major goal is to stop people before they get really high in this experience, so to stop the emotion dysregulation process early on as opposed to when it's at its full-blown state. Going to the next slide, you'll see an individual standing in a much larger context of a city. And what I want to make with this point is that emotional cascades are sort of tricky because they're sort of, you can break them down into this happened. So somebody had an emotional cascade and then they self-injured. And that's just a one-time experience. But what we can see is that we can use emotional cascades repeated over multiple times over the course of one's life, and we can see how that starts to lead to the development of borderline personality disorder. And one way we can understand this is through the topic of emergence, which is another one of these sciences like chaos theory. And what that basically says is that when we have multiple things connecting together, sometimes they can form something that's even more than just the sum of its parts. So let's go to the picture that says ecosystem. So this is a highlight of how what we see with the concept of emergence. So an ecosystem is combined of things like sunlight, vegetation, water, humidity and moisture, animals and plants and other organisms all living together. But when they're all together, they form something that goes beyond each of those pieces into what we think of as an ecosystem. Another good example of emergence is an economy. The economy is a very sort of abstract large phenomenon that's made up of individuals buying and selling things to each other, living in communities that are selling among each other, between states, between countries, and to an entire global network that makes it so that it's a ton of different interactions going to create one large effect of what we call the economy. So this is what the concept of emergence is. And what we can see is that this applies to BPP as well. So if you go to the next slide, it shows the emotional cascade model. And you see that there are a couple circles there, emotional cascades and behavioral dysregulation. And what we see is that this is, in our lab, what we think the sort of heart of this problem of BPD is. People are having these emotional cascades, and they're responding to these emotional cascades with dysregulated behaviors. Now, the problem is that there's a whole variety of other factors going on. So you'll see in the next slide, things like they can often be invalidated or criticized from others. So this could be bullying at school, maybe a problematic sort of romantic or family relationship. It could be a variety of different things. Similarly, you'll see distorted cognitions and views of others. So people with BPD have often come to develop sort of maladaptive beliefs about the world, including themselves, including their families, including their friends, and a variety of distorted cognitions that can lead to problematic responses. And what we see is that these are just a host of a whole bunch of things that can be connected. Now, to keep people from getting too lost in all the mix of variables, I'm going to highlight again a square around the emotional cascades and dysregulated behaviors, and then two more squares around the two points that I just mentioned, the invalidation and distorted cognitions. Now, we see that having problematic invalidation or distorted cognitions are likely to lead to emotional cascades. If someone's being bullied at school, for example, they're going to have more emotional cascades as a result of that, and that's going to lead to dysregulated behaviors. But what happens is as these various things interact with each other, we start to get, over time, the development of borderline personality disorder. It's not just one bullying episode or one bad day at school or bad day at work. It's a whole variety of bad interactions going on leading to emotional cascades and then dysregulated behaviors. But what happens is over time, people start to develop patterns of behavior, and that can affect the things that initially started the problem. So by having this development of borderline personality disorder, it can lead to more invalidation or criticism from others, or even more distorted cognitions or views or problematic beliefs about the world. So people with BPD, as they're struggling to cope with emotional cascades and engaging in dysregulated behaviors like self-injury, might just start think, I can't control myself. I don't know what I can do to feel better. All I can think of is this self-injury, and that helps me feel better. So we start to see that this effect of the borderline personality sort of developing can make the factors that led to it even worse, and that makes it a particularly challenging disorder then to sort of understand and treat. So moving into treatment implications, which is, I think, an important component of the emotional cascade models, it helps us understand not only the disorder, but how can we use this understanding of it to better help people that are suffering from it. And one of the ways that I think that this model is helpful is it helps us understand dialectical behavior therapy better. And although there are a number of different treatments for BPD that have shown a lot of promise, DBT is one of the most researched. And it's a complex therapy that's focused on both individual treatment sessions and group therapy sessions, and a lot of focus on skill building, understanding of emotions and interpersonal behaviors. It's a very promising therapy. But one of the things that's been sort of problematic with DBT is that we haven't understood as well why it works. We know that it works from various different studies, but the reason why has not been quite as clear. If you go to the next slide with the trees, you'll see mindfulness. This is one of the big foundations of DBT. And mindfulness refers to sort of training someone to focus their attention where they wish to focus it. So instead of your mind running amok and having control of you, we teach people through mindfulness that they can control their mind and their thoughts, and in the process that can help manage emotions. So we often train people with breathing exercises to focus instead of on upsetting thoughts, to focus on their physical sensations of breathing, to focus on sensations like sounds that they're hearing, music. There's a variety of different mindfulness techniques. Now, this has been shown to be a very effective part of the treatment, and people, from my own clinical experience, often report that this really helps them sort of get a hold of their mind. Now, why this works then in terms of BPD starts to make a little bit more sense when you think about the emotional cascade model. What are people doing when they are upset about something? Their mind is running amok. They're thinking about a variety of upsetting problems, and their mind is sort of getting out of control with what they're doing, just as we showed in many of those graphs. Well, this is where mindfulness can help someone learn to start shifting their mind away when they're upset, away from the upsetting thoughts, instead to much more neutral things like bodily sensations or participating in activities and focusing on things that are not upsetting. And that can help diffuse emotional cascades before they get going. Another important part of DBT is a heavy focus on helping individuals find new activities as opposed to relying on old emotional crutches like self-injury or substance use or other problematic behaviors. And this makes, once again, a lot more sense with the emotional cascade model. Most of these individuals with BPD are engaging in these disrelated behaviors as a desperate way to escape negative emotions. By coming up with alternative behaviors that can be really helpful, they can learn to distract from upsetting thoughts using a healthier behavior. So one of the behaviors that's showing to be more promising in a lot of research for things like self-injury or depression or a variety of things is exercise. If people engage in exercise when they're upset, that's a very distracting activity and can help them focus away from doing something like self-injury or substance use and instead manage their emotions through that. There are other activities that people could do as well. I often recommend to my patients to use puzzles. So if they like puzzles, they could do things like Sudoku puzzles or crossword puzzles. And those are very nice because it helps you to focus away from the upsetting problem and instead focus on solving the puzzle. And in the process, it distracts someone and it helps them to disengage from the emotional cascade process and to feel better before they get to the point of self-injury. Some of our work is starting to extend and look at this with technology. One of the promising aspects of technology is now people can use their phones to not only use treatment apps, such as those being developed by my colleague Shireen Rinsby here at Rutgers. She's working on a DBT app that looks very promising. But also they could use things like games on the smartphone to distract themselves. So this could include things like Angry Birds. So if someone's upset, play Angry Birds. It sounds almost a little bit silly, but when you think about the process of getting engaged in a game and that's distracting away from upsetting thoughts, that can help short-circuit emotional cascades before they get out of control. So there's a variety of activities that could be useful for people trying to better manage their emotions with borderline personality disorder. There's also been some interesting applications with sleep for the emotional cascade research that we're doing. For example, recently I published a study that was showing that people with BPD have really bad sleep in general and really bad problems with insomnia. So they have trouble falling asleep. They often wake up in the middle of the night, and then they often wake up much too early because of their because of insomnia. And I've noticed this working with a number of patients who are telling me this, and I got to wondering if perhaps this might be due to the sort of ruminative part of the borderline personality disorder. So people are trying to go to bed, but they're thinking about all these various problems, which is making them upset and making it harder to sleep. we were able to show, my colleagues, Ribeiro and Joyner and I, were able to show that this actually also leads to nightmares in people with BPD. So with ESM, which is the daily diary study with the Palm Pilots, we were able to show that when people were having a bad day in terms of rumination and negative emotion, especially those with BPD, they were much more likely to have a nightmare at night. So it's this idea that by taking sort of this emotional cascade process into the night with them, it's leading to more upsetting dreams and nightmares about the problems that they're having. So all of this makes sleep worse. Well, why is sleep important? Because all the research shows that is people don't regulate emotions well during the day when they didn't sleep well at night. So here we've got a very important clinical area that we might be able to really make some quick impact with people with BPD. If we can help them sleep better, then we can also hopefully help them regulate emotions better, even if it's a challenging day that's ahead of them. So I think that that's a very promising direction for the future. I'm sure that a lot of family members are curious what the takeaway from the emotional cascade model is in terms of how can they work with their family member to try and help them cope with negative emotions and work towards a better outcome with treatment. And that's a challenging concept because I think people with BPD struggle so much with emotions that it's challenging for them to manage emotions at all, let alone for us to help us manage them, help them manage them. But there are some things that I think people can do that can help make this process go smoother and better for the person that they love. And the first is to better understand the process of emotions in BPD, which is why I've been talking so extensively about our research on emotional cascades. The more we can understand what our loved one is going through, the more we can help them to calm down as much as possible when they're upset, the more we can be patient and empathetic with them, even if they're in a very challenging situation or we're getting potentially frustrated with them. So by understanding the process, we can better tackle it, and if we don't know what's going on. Other things that people can do is work with their loved ones to come up with a variety of distracting activities that the individual can do when feeling upset. So we just talked about things. You know what? If they enjoy playing Angry Birds or some other good smartphone app, or they like games like Sudoku or puzzles, then those are the kind of things that we want to help encourage the individual to use when feeling upset. And the sooner that we have them get engaged in those activities when they start to feel upset, the better, because it stops this upsetting, out-of-control emotional process sooner as opposed to later when it's harder to stop it. Another thing that people can do is develop a coping card of distracting activities. So this is a little card that someone can carry, or you could put it in the smartphone notes list, a variety of different things. On a note, you could write on a note and tape it to the refrigerator. But what it is a list of activities that people can try going through when they're upset. Could be talking to a friend. It could be trying one of these distracting activities. It could be trying a treatment skill that they've been learning in therapy. But by having this list of activities and having it physically right there, it helps people jump into a much more tangible problem-solving mode when they're upset, as opposed to trying to search for something in the moment. Whenever people are upset, they're usually not thinking in the most productive way. So having it already written and ready to use can be very helpful with going to those problems right off the bat, as opposed to trying to think of them when upset. Finally, the last part is try not to get frustrated. And this is because when somebody with BPD is getting upset, it's a very intense experience. And it's easy to get drawn into that experience if we're not careful ourselves. I've seen this myself in treatment with people with BPD, is when they get upset, I start to kind of get upset either for them or potentially with them. So when we get frustrated, though, that can make it all worse, because if we say something that's potentially not helpful to the situation, or get drawn into a fight if someone's really upset, that can just make the whole experience even worse. So by understanding the ways that we might potentially contribute to something like an emotional cascade, we can potentially help someone recover better and faster when they're having a stressful experience if we're not adding things unnecessarily to the mix. And just remember that building emotion regulation skills takes time. Most of these patients didn't get to be the way they are in terms of their borderline personality disorder in one night. Usually it was developed slowly over time through a variety of painful and difficult experiences. Learning how to cope with such challenging and difficult emotions is going to take much more time than maybe somebody without this experience would have. Just think about the graphs I was just showing. People with BPD showed much more exponential effects in terms of getting much more reactive with negative emotion than a variety of other patients. And oftentimes we're, as family members, the ones that are not experiencing this emotional reactivity. So it can be harder for us to understand. So just remember that it takes time to build new skills and to learn to regulate emotions well. And we have to keep that in mind with our family and loved ones. With that, I would like to go ahead and open up the floor for questions. And I just want to acknowledge funding of my research that's been able to help me show a lot of this effects and help improve our understanding and hopefully eventually treatment of BPD. So the Brain and Behavior Research Foundation through a NARSAD Young Investigator Award. The Families for Borderline Personality Disorder, which is an outstanding patient advocacy group, and I recommend you looking into them if you're interested, as well as the National Institute of Mental Health and the Association for Behavioral and Cognitive Therapy through a Neil S. Jacobson Award. And with that, I'd be happy to take some questions.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for that talk. So we have a question and a comment. I'll start with the question. Might rumination be a secondary target? And if so, is it a behavior, i.e., do people ruminate about various issues, or is it a repetitive chain of thoughts around one specific line of thinking?
That's a great question. So I think rumination is an important target for therapy. It's not the only one. There are definitely a number of treatment targets for BPD, but it's an important one that we can help patients to understand and to help monitor and keep track of. Now, the second part of the question was, is it usually just focused on only one thing, or can it jump between a variety of things? And I would say that the answer tends to be the latter, that when people with BPD are ruminating, they're often jumping between multiple problems. You start thinking about one problem, and that makes you upset about another problem and then another one. And that's often why people can sort of feel like so much is wrong with their lives when maybe they just started off with one problem that happened. So usually people will often ruminate about a variety of things, and that can make it much more intense and much worse.
Okay. Oh, and here's another question. Has rumination been studied in terms of synaptic plasticity?
Sorry, what was that last part?
Has rumination been studied in terms of synaptic plasticity?
I see what the question is. So I'm not sure if it's been studied specifically in terms of synaptic connections, but it has been shown to be differentially related in people's brains. So people have done neuroimaging studies, not with BPD specifically, but with other disorders like depression, and shown that people who ruminate heavily often have different brain responses, frequently involved in both the emotional and the cognitive processing centers of the brain, and that is one thing that we think leads to people to have these different cognitive and emotional responses. If you remember from the slides I was showing, some people respond with this sort of extreme emotional cascade process, and some people don't. Well, why people can respond to these often is likely impacted by biology and brain responding. So unfortunately, we don't yet have a medication that specifically targets this process, but ideally with time we'll be able to not only identify behavioral and cognitive intervention techniques, but also hopefully maybe some medical or biological interventions as well.
Okay, so now there's a comment for you. Thank you, in all caps, thank you for thinking of conclusions and implications for families. You rock.
I wish I could take credit for that, but that was brought up before in a previous talk I gave when someone asked me that, and I didn't have a good answer, so I thought I'm going to start making sure I really think about that because I think it's a very challenging thing from a clinician's perspective, but definitely from families it's even more challenging. Anything else?
So there are no other questions, but I want to thank you again so much for donating your time and for this informative and elucidating talk.
No problem. I think it's a great mission with the NEA, and I really hope that people got something out of the talk and are able to understand what might be going on with their loved ones better or themselves potentially.
Okay, so I want to thank everybody who has joined in on the call and to remind you to please join us for our next call on March 22nd, same time, same place, with Dr. Catherine Dixon-Gordon, and her talk will be entitled The Interplay of Emotional and Interpersonal Processes in BPD. And thanks a lot. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.